is Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. As we begin the program, I continually remind you, please do not hesitate to make a simple phone call. 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to their website, Harvell and, spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. I guarantee you, you will be surprised and pleased with your resolution of your problem, but also with the response that you get. So please make that phone call. And as we begin the program, good afternoon to you, Cecil and Wes.
Yes, good afternoon, Lockwood.
Afternoon, Lockwood.
Lockwood, we have talked on the program several times about the legal word is elective share, but the concept here, the background is that, you know, the law responds to our culture and to our the way in which, you know, our society and culture, if you will, evolves. Right. And, of course, Lockwood, it's no surprise to any of our listeners that there's a lot of divorce.
Right.
And guess what? There's a lot of remarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there is marriage not just because someone has had a divorce, but because they lost their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And as they become older, they choose to have a companion and they get married. So getting married is a very popular thing, okay? And it's more, it's just, you know, things have changed, Lockwood. It used to be that folks would get married, you know, at 19, and they would stay married until they're 70 or 80, and then that was the end of this concept of marriage. That's just not the society now that we live in. It's much more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more changeable. We, of course, have got clients that have been married, you know, two and three times. So with this marriage, which is a very significant legal event, and we need to start by just saying that, Lockwood. A certificate of marriage creates all sorts of legal benefits as well as maybe potentially disadvantages legally. There are tax consequences. There are inheritance consequences. There are incapacity consequences. The list is just kind of endless of all of the rights and entitlements that and responsibilities that go along with that certificate of marriage. And Wes and I are just, as a result of this moving society and culture and so many marriages being not necessarily the first marriage with the common children from the first marriage, we, of course, are seeing more and more cases with second and third marriages, and then the consequences of, here we go, Lockwood, not doing thorough and complete planning. If you don't plan when you get remarried, then it is just an accident waiting to happen. That is a event in one's life that absolutely should be your first phone call to your lawyer,
right,
to sit down in a conference and discuss the effects of the marital contract. And so we can, you know, have a planning session before the marriage. We can also have a planning session after the marriage. But the bottom line is that you really do need to sit down with a good lawyer and talk about the consequences of the fact that you've elected to remarry. Okay, Wes. Wes is busy with what we have in the office, which is known as the elective share. This is where people potentially have not planned well. There has not been an update in their documents. And as a result, now something happens. Usually either the husband or the wife might pass on. And then there we are in documents that did not get updated, that did not anticipate this right, this very prominent law in the state of North Carolina.
Wow.
That basically says that after so many years, the spouse, no matter what the will might say, is entitled to a percentage of the estate. And of course, very soon after the marriage, not just a few years, if you will, the percentage goes up as high as Lockwood is 50%. It's an interesting law. It's a law that a lot of folks don't know about. And as a result of that, Wes and I are very busy giving advice on elective share.
You used the term a few moments ago, Cecil, the word contract, marital contract. So we look at marriage as sort of a spiritual, religious event, but there is a formal agreement, understanding, contractual arrangement, if I understood that correctly. And that is, I'm going to leap ahead, that is, if you will, the big hurdle or the big issue in front of us, but the word contract.
Well, marriage is a contract, and I know we don't think of it that way, but it is a contract between two people. And of course, as a result of that contract, as I've said, and I'm repeating myself, all sorts of rights and obligations accrue, whether we like it or not, Lockwood.
Okay.
We can alter some of these rights and obligations by seeking out legal advice and having a lawyer explain these rights and obligations and document away some of these rights and obligations. But they're out there. They attach to a marriage.
Okay. Wes, you were going to explain some things, I guess, about the elective shares?
So the elective share, obviously, is a right that only arrives through marriage. If the parties are not married, then we don't have any type of elective share claim. If you have a close relationship where folks are living together or maybe acting like husband and wife, but they never were married and one dies, then the survivor doesn't have any rights other than what would be in a will in the deceased estate. But when we're married, like Cecil was saying, we don't think of it as a contract, but we are binding ourselves to certain legal obligations, liabilities, rights, and, you know, the good and the bad with regard to that. We're not saying you should not get married. We're just advising with regard to the implications from a legal perspective. Mm-hmm. If we have a situation, Lockwood, where we have someone who's passed away and they're married, then the surviving spouse has the right for a period of 6 months after the estate is opened to file an elective share claim. If they don't file that claim within that 6 month period of time, then they waive that right altogether and they can never bring it. So 6 months in our world of litigation, estate related matters, is a relatively short period of time. So listeners should really pay attention with regard to that, because in the event that there's a right to an elective share, if you get past the 6 month period, you just cannot bring it. There's really not any basis for that. Bringing the elective share claim normally comes in a situation, Lockwood, when it's a second or third marriage, because if you have, you know, the traditional long-term marriage, one husband, one wife, the two kids or however many children, most folks, when they have their estate plan put together, their will, or if they don't and it passes through intestacy, don't have too much of a problem with, you know, everything going to each other and then to the children. So that kind of, it flows through the single family unit. But in the event that you have a second marriage and you have children from a previous marriage, a lot of times what we see is we see maybe kind of like an agreement, somewhat of a handshake agreement, where you've got the husband and wife agreeing, well, we'll leave everything to each other and then equally to all of our kids. Equally to the husband's kids, maybe there's two on his side, equally to the wife's kids, two on her side, something like that. That normally is what we see. I mean, sometimes it's a little different. You look at the amount of assets there are. Sometimes the husband keeps all of his stuff segregated, wife keeps her stuff segregated, and it's done that way. But sometimes, you know, we see that even though there may have been some type of agreement with regard to that, and you know, kind of husband and wife were on the same page, as they get older, there may be influences such as children's influences, others' influences. Could be that you have one of the two die and the other, you know, then have the elective share claim, or there could be like one of them is in a nursing home or something like that, or has a long-term care situation. And maybe there's some planning that's trying to be done to keep the surviving spouse to receive much of anything. And so we see all kind of different situations when folks die where the surviving spouse or the children of the surviving spouse are surprised mm-hmm. about how the first spouse to die in a second or third marriage changed things, changed beneficiaries, changed the will, changed the trust, did these things that we didn't know he did or she did. And so when we are in that situation, and if there is an attempt, you know, to leave less to the surviving spouse than what was kind of agreed upon and what they kind of always thought they were going to do, then we have that elective share under the statute, which is part of that contract that we talked about, that protects us. And so if we bring a proper elective share claim by the surviving spouse within the 6 months, then we then look at how long the marriage was. Was it 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Within the first 5 years, it's a 15% of all total net assets. Between 5 and 10, it goes to 25. Between 10 and 15, it goes to 33%. And over 15 years, it goes to 50%. This includes, as we've mentioned on the program before, not just real estate, not just money in the bank, not just a 401k IRA, not just any type of investments. It also includes life insurance, any type of non-probate assets, assets that pass outside of the estate. So it's a very, very broad brushstroke. It's a broad cast net, okay? It captures everything. And so that process, after you file the elective share, whoever is dealing with the estate, the executor, then within a short period of time has an obligation to then disclose to the party who's filed the elective share all of the assets. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times we're not really sure what all the assets were of the person who passed away. We don't know exactly all the life insurance. We don't know all of the investments. We don't know what business interests he had. You know, we can look on in the register of deeds and with the tax office to see what real property there is. Of course, we're not sure about all the accounts, because in some cases we are actually dealing with the surviving spouse. In some cases, as the maybe attorneys filing the elective share, we're dealing with the children of the surviving spouse, because the surviving spouse may be of advanced age and maybe she just wasn't involved in that part of his life, for mm-hmm. example. There has to be complete transparency with regard to what all the assets are so we can calculate that elective share. And in the event that there is a failure to provide that information, the statute allows for recovery of attorney's fees and costs for the surviving spouse who is having to go through legal processes to require the executor to provide the information that they should freely provide. So, you know, as you read through the elective share statute, you kind of see it's about, you know, maybe 10 pages. It's in the world of the law, that's not that much. There is certainly an attempt in that statute, which is not all that old. Our current elective share statute has probably been on the books for 15 years, something like that, maybe 20. But you see that there's an attempt to make it somewhat streamlined. Mm-hmm. Okay, person dies, surviving spouse, proof of marriage, filing the elective share properly, production of all information so the calculation of the elective share can be made. In the event you don't produce that information, then you can have a hearing on it and attorney fees can be assessed. You can use the rules of discovery to get more information. So, and then we calculate the elective share, and the elective share is then entered as an order by the court, and then a determination as to where it's to be paid from is determined. So that seems, you know, what, 7 or 8 steps there, not too complicated. But I can tell you, the elective share claims sometimes become incredibly complicated when we're dealing with like valuations of business, these issues with regard to production of information so we can calculate the elective share, these type things. You know, I've had these cases that have gone on for years. Now, I like for them to get resolved quickly for my clients, but sometimes, you know, we're having to kind of fight to get all of the information to properly calculate, you know, that elective share. So it's quite a process. Probably the most important thing in this program is just for folks to know it's out there, just for folks to realize I didn't, you know, to get educated a little bit, to know that under these circumstances, there's a safety net to protect the surviving spouse. And this kind of goes back into old common law, where there was an interest always to protect the sanctity of marriage and to protect the surviving spouse. And it was for years and years called a dissent from the will. I dissent from the will and I take my share from dissent. In more common or more recent law, it's called, at least in North Carolina and most other states, an elective share. So it has progressed through the years and become, you know, kind of a more modern law in dealing with these things. But it's, I would say, in the world of a state administration and states, that it's one of the least understood and least used areas of the law, but one of the most powerful ways to take care of a surviving spouse in the event, you know, of a marriage and if the circumstances present. But these circumstances of the second marriage and the children from a previous marriage present more and more and more often as time goes on, because as Cecil was saying, relationships between individuals, second marriages, third marriages, are more prevalent now than I think that they were years ago. We see them more frequently. So these issues come up. And a lot of people have no idea about how the elective share works. They don't even never heard of it. They don't know how what their rights are with regard to that. One case comes to mind. Several years ago, I had a surviving spouse come see me about something very simple as far as some personal property that she wanted to keep, furniture, okay, based on the death of her husband of 30 years. That's really her only issue. And so we sat down and looked at and talked about the furniture she wanted to keep, and it seemed like a pretty simple thing. And, you know, we got to talking about the circumstances and the children from a previous marriage and what was left to her by her deceased husband and all that. 3 or 4 years later, once we went through the elective share, now this one was kind of drawn out after some litigation, we handed to her a check over $500,000.
Wow.
Because the power of the law was on her side with regard to a proper elective share claim.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins on the topic of elective shares. You know, I'm thinking of a situation where, for example, an individual has been married for 20 years. He divorces. We're going to use a male in this case. He divorces, and a period of time elapses, say 5 years, maybe 10, and he remarries. And his new wife is not aware that he was previously married, possibly, but then 20 years later, we're looking at a 50-year lifespan here on the marriage, the husband dies. The question I have is, the first wife, who's still surviving, still has elective share privileges, is a question I'm asking. And
are you saying that the first marriage ended in divorce?
In divorce, yes.
No, all rights of elective share end at divorce.
Okay.
A great question, though. That's a great question, Lockwood. I mean, let's say we're in a situation where we have husband and wife, and they're just not living together.
Right.
They're still legally married.
Okay.
But they just decided, you know, irreconcilably, we're just not going to live together. Maybe we'll talk every once in a while, but just not really act like husband and wife because it just didn't work out. But neither one of us are going to bother to go actually get divorce, because we don't really want to go through that.
All right.
We don't want to spend the money on it. Well, if one of them dies, the other has the right to an elective share. It doesn't matter how the relationship is proceeding. Now, a defense to an elective share would be abandonment. So let's say that we have the spouse who is claiming the elective share brings the claim, but that spouse abandoned the deceased spouse. Let's say the deceased spouse had a health issue, and the surviving spouse didn't really heed that in sickness and health part of getting married.
Right.
Didn't really stick by. And so the estate could raise abandonment as a defense to the elective share claim, and then that would need to be litigated, and that would be a jury issue as to whether there was actually abandonment.
But potentially, Lockwood, they haven't abandoned each other. This is so interesting. We're over here in this little cubbyhole. I had that just yesterday. I had a wonderful lady come by, and she proceeds to tell me that she and her husband have been separated for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
He has a home that is also in her name. She moved out of that home and has her own home now that's in her name. And they've been married for a long time. They have 2 children, but they did not get a divorce, but yet they are separated, and they have been separated. Now, all of a sudden, he's very, very sick. He actually is in the hospital. Issues concerning his long-term health and long-term health care are evolving, and here we are. And yet they are married, okay, even though they're separated. Lockwood, we hear these kinds of facts all the time. It's sad in a way, I guess we can't, Wes and I can't make folks go get legal advice, and we can't make them dot their I's and cross their T's. But I'm telling you, when they don't, it can become a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of times in interviews in estate planning, how many times? Well, I've been married twice, and I'm married. Well, your first marriage, did it end in divorce?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not, even your clients will say, well, I'm not real sure.
Ooh.
I think so. I think we got a divorce. I guess we had to get a divorce for me to get remarried. I mean, Wes has had several cases like this, Lockwood, where the client wasn't real sure whether they were married or not married. And then there we go. So the devil is in the details, Lockwood, and we, as lawyers, interestingly, get involved in these cases where there's just not the clarity that we wish. So I wanted to comment on that, because getting married is very significant. And if you're not going to stay married, then for heaven's sakes, let's get divorced.
Right.
Let's don't leave the situation in limbo for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years and just hope that those issues, that marital contract, Lockwood, that we've been talking about, just magically goes away, because it doesn't just go away. Now, Wes mentions the word abandonment, but like this file yesterday that I have, they haven't abandoned each other because they're in contact with each other. They have 2 common children. The children are in their 20s and 30s who are in relationship. They get together for Christmas, things like that. You would not really say they're abandoned. They just are living separate and apart, and have been living separate and apart for a long, long time, separated. So to go back and get focused on what we've been talking about, I do think Wes and I need to, and I know we're about to conclude, we need to conclude with, look, Lockwood, we've talked about the problem of elective share. We've talked about clients who are getting married and how they need to seek legal advice before they get married, or even shortly thereafter. This is what I want to make sure our listeners hear. There are planning mechanisms to limit this elective share, to put it into perspective. If we've got clients that have both been married before, they each have children from a prior marriage, and yet the husband wants to clearly provide for his spouse if he were to die, then there is a trust that we can establish whereby she would be cared for out of some of the proceeds from the husband's estate, but those proceeds or and or assets would eventually pass back to his children from a prior marriage.
Uh-huh.
So there is a planning mechanism that we can put into place that will mitigate the effect of this elective share. There is also a postnuptial agreement,
mm-hmm.
which can be prepared. That's a little complicated. It's costly because we have to involve a couple of different lawyers. There has to be independent legal advice, and there needs to be, in the best of postnuptial agreements, there needs to be adequate consideration, because in a prenuptial, before the marriage contract, the consideration under the law is the marriage itself, the
right.
fact that we are getting married. But once we are already married, what's the consideration? What's the quid pro quo, the give and take for a postnuptial agreement? So those are more complicated, but they are out there. They can be done properly, but it takes a skilled lawyer to make sure the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed on a postnuptial agreement. So Wes and I want to conclude by just saying, look, yes, be aware that this elective share lurks. Be aware that all sorts of rights and obligations and responsibilities lurk as a result of the contract of marriage. And for heaven's sakes, go and seek some legal advice as to what are these consequences and what can we do before we die to put into action a plan that will not create excessive litigation. So it's a big deal, Lockwood, and we conclude with where I started and Wes started, which is that, you know, in the culture that we live in now, and there's nothing wrong with our
right,
culture
right.
and our society as it exists right now, but people are getting divorced more often and remarried. Goodness gracious, also yesterday, our office is just a soap opera. I had an 85-year-old man
okay.
in
yeah.
my office. His wife is not doing well. I asked when they got married. He said, well, we got married about 9 months ago.
Right. I know. We're living longer. Yeah, that's the other
He's
issue.
He's 85.
Yeah.
He's 85. He's driving.
Yeah.
He walked in the front door, was on time for his appointment.
Right.
Told me her name, told me about her children, told me about his son, who, by the way, is a doctor up at Johns Hopkins. And he's just gotten married.
Right.
You know, just right at the end of last year. So that's the kind of society that we now live in. That's wonderful. He's very happy to be married again, it seemed. But my goodness. Does that bring up some issues?
Yes.
that and he knew that, which is good. And he is wanting our law firm to navigate those issues for him. So we're doing that.
This is, again, we'll conclude with that observation. The law firm we're talking about is Harvell and Collins. And this, I don't want to say that this is a specialty, but they do have specialties, and taking care of estate matters is number one on their list. That's Harvell and Collins. And please go to that website, harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. They have a plethora of specialists in their office. The number, by the way, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. And I'm going to conclude with this one comment. No matter your age, do look ahead to the services of Harvell and Collins. And with that, Cecil, thank you very much. Wes, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.